Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Yes, Christmas is nearly here, and while some focus on the presents, we concentrate on the present. Yes, your presents. We are by the fans, for the fans. So, we love stories that embrace fans and their enjoyment of the game. We welcome back to the show old friend Tim Harris. He's been a player, a manager, coach, general manager and director of football of many clubs over the years, but after an 18-month stint as manager at Worcester City, he seems very settled since his move upstairs onto the board as director of football there, and very pleased at the club's latest move to sign a ground share at Six Ways Stadium, famed for hosting rugby in the town, as he goes on to explain. If ever there was a tale that exemplified the power of the non-league family, it's Harry Foster's. Now banging in the goals for Street FC in the Western League, he's seen clubs rally round of all colours and all creeds to support a charitable walk this weekend to the local Somerset Derby at Shepton Mallet, raising funds for a charity that has provided support to him and his family since the sudden death of their young daughter just over a year ago. Matt Badcock returns to this show this week, providing insight and knowledge on the week's non-league news, and also what we can expect in this weekend's final pre-Christmas issue of the non-league paper. So it is time to sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Okay then, so we begin this week with a club with grounds to be excited. Grounds being the operative word, because from a nomadic existence, they've had heartbreak, voluntary relegation, but the club's rebuilt, it's resurrected. It's announced in the past week the latest move in their long-term plan to get a new home of their own and climbing back up the pyramid. To tell us more, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, old friend of the show, director at Worcester City, Mr. Tim Harris. Welcome back, Tim.
Yeah, thank you, Tim.
Well, it's always good to get you on. This deal, then, it sees Worcester City move to the former Worcester Raiders rugby ground, or still is the Worcester Raiders rugby ground, I guess, at Six Ways for the 25-26 season. Ground sharing with Raiders themselves, hoping to rejoin the RFU second tier at that same time too, I believe. I'd imagine this has been many months of negotiation to get to this stage.
Yeah, but I just need to correct you, really. It's Worcester Warriors, not Worcester Raiders. The Warriors rugby club obviously went bust, and you know, they're trying desperately to try and get it resurrected, and that looks very positive at the moment. But the stadium at Six Ways is a fantastic venue. Not just location, it's still in Worcester. It's, you know, 11,000-12,000 seat stadium with superb facilities. And yeah, it's taken a while, but at the end of the day, in terms of getting this club back to where they were when they unfortunately lost St George's Lane many years ago, it's been, I wouldn't say a struggle so much, it's been a lot of effort and a lot of commitment by a lot of people that have put their heart and souls into it. So, you know, this is the next step, if you like, of moving back to where we were in the National League.
Yeah, it certainly sets out a statement, doesn't it? Because I know it was mentioned before before you moved to your current home, sharing at the Worcester FA at Claines Lane. It might be a possibility to move to Six Ways, but then obviously, as you say, the rugby club has had its own financial problems and looking to rebuild there. Is it just that the time's right now? Is it that the your football club is on the rise, isn't it? You won the Hellenic and had a great run in the FA Vars to the semi-final last term. You needed something else in your sights, I guess, did you? And a big stadium like this is the perfect way of setting that target.
I think if you wind back the clock and you know when it was first mooted, I've been at Worcester City now for 4 years. I come in as manager and moved upstairs to director of football. But you know, in the 4 years, it's been a great journey. Mm. But at the time, I don't think the rugby stadium or Six Ways was the right move for the club because it had gone through a very nomadic period at Bromsgrove Rovers and Kidderminster Harriers, and it was desperate to get back home. But, you know, we've lost basically a generation of supporters over the years. And, you know, the only way forward now is to is get things right on the pitch, like any football club up and down the country, and try and recreate a new fan base along with their loyal, and I will say loyal, they are very loyal and hardcore supporters.
And I, you know, I remember going to St George's, seeing a couple of very hard fought battles there with Hayes and Yedding back in the day. They're a passionate bunch as well. You mentioned that this one's, is Six Ways more central to Worcester? Does it make it easier for fans to get to? Is that a way that you're going to be able to bring this next generation on?
No, I think like any football club, you've got to look at your grassroots and you've got to look at the youth setup. You've got to try and encourage the future fans and the youth. The youth is so important to every football club. We've now got 30 youth teams operating under the Worcester City banner. And that is where the future is. But you know, in terms of geographical location, it's just off the M5 on the motorway. There's plenty of parking. You know, it's a 3G pitch, so you know we won't have the hiccups and the problems we've had over the last few years here at Clanes Lane.
I mean, non-league knows you well. You know non-league even better. But I'm looking down my notes here. You're a keeper at clubs including Shrewsbury Town, Newport County, Cheltenham Town, Redditch United, Gloucester City. Manager, I think we've spoken to you pretty much all of these clubs. Cinderford Town, Newport County, Forest Green Rovers, Merthyr Tydfil, Gloucester City, Redditch United, Worcester City, as you mentioned. I think you were director. We spoke to you as director of football at Tamworth, Hereford. I remember you as general manager at Newport County with your big handshake and welcome me to a visit there. You seem to have done pretty much everything in football. So how does this deal rank in terms of importance for a club, having experienced all those problems? You've been at clubs that have experienced lots of problems. That's the problem of non-league. But how important is this deal in the grand scheme of the history of Tim Harris in non-league?
Well, it's not about Tim Harris. Let's make that 100%. But, you know, I'm very passionate about my football, hence why I'm still involved at the ripe old age. But, you know, when I look back over my career, I highlight that, man, I managed nearly 350 games for Newport and 300 and some odd games for Gloucester and Cinderford, et cetera. So I've managed over 1,000 games of football. But the one highlight that really does stand out was when I was at Newport County, first time around as the manager, we played at an athletic stadium. And you've probably been there at Spitty Park. And, you know, it wasn't really conducive to, you know, a fan experience, a good fan experience. And when I went back with Dean Holdsworth as director of football, we moved to Rodney Parade, home of Newport Gwent Dragons, and it literally did transform the club. You know, it was in the heart and soul of the city. You know, it gave us a facility to expand commercial opportunities. It gave us a facility to attract players. And more importantly, it gave the fans a really good match day experience. And, you know, I think all of those three categories that I've mentioned will be a great benefit to everybody involved in Worcester City Football Club.
Yeah, and you say this is your club now, clearly, by you know, the time you spent there, the things you're doing. It's a Thursday evening. You're at the football club now. Do you sort of ever have 5 minutes without thinking non-league?
Look, as you know, I've had a few personal issues recently with my family, and that obviously takes priority. But you know, football is in your blood, and all those managers that I've met and the people have been involved in non-league football all over the years, like yourself, Tim, as well. It is what it is. We love it. And, you know, I couldn't see me not being involved in some capacity somewhere.
And you mentioned the youth as well at Worcester City. How, you know, you've had some great moments with Worcester City, as I say, last season with a success, and now the new ground. But how important is it for you as an old head of non-league to see the youngsters just enjoying football?
I can't stress enough how important it is to see youngsters. I mean, there's a lot of trials and tribulations for young kids growing up these days, and they talk about the computers and they talk about the TV and all the other things that they've got to take their minds off it. But any sport really, it gives them some fresh air. It puts some smiles on their faces. It gives them something to work at. So, you know, from that point of view, it's vitally important. But our youth setup here over the last 12, 18 months has really, again, like the football club, since the new owner got involved, it's been transformed. And it's something that we are, as a board of directors, so keen on driving forward, because that's the future.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that new owner, Simon Lancaster. I think he came in, May 23, taking over the chairmanship as well from old friend of the show, Steve Good, who I think is still on the board with you. You've got some great people that know non-league, but how important was it to have maybe fresh impetus to lead those people forward to get to this stage with the Six Ways deal?
Well, I think I alluded to it earlier, really, Tim, that the people that have kept this club alive since they've been in exile, I suppose, since they've been at Bromsgrove and Kidderminster and, you know, around and at Claims Lane, you know, you can't underestimate the excellent work that everybody did. But it gets to a stage where you need that new impetus, you need that business acumen, you need that investment. And to a certain degree, the crowds that we've attracted here at Claims Lane is unbelievable. And, you know, going to Six Ways, I mean, last year we played Great Wakering. I think there was 3,500 there. We played a league game against Worcester Raiders. There was 2,500 there. So the potential there is good. And that's what we're all quite excited about.
And I'm guessing that you've definitely hung up your boots nowadays. Not going to appear in a dugout near us any time soon.
Hey, never say never. But
I think you told me that once before.
what I will say, we have an excellent manager who's got a superb management team around him that he trusts. He has asked me to step in the dugout last year when someone wasn't available. But no, look, you know, as a young manager, I worked with people like Brian Godfrey, you might remember, people like Colin Addison was my assistant at Newport, then I was his assistant at Forest Green. So, you know, I think it's vitally important for some young managers coming into the game to be able to sort of tap into the experience that I did with Colin and Brian Godfrey. And so I'm only too pleased to help Chris Corns in any way I can make this club successful.
And the feedback that I've had from Chris's dressing room and people that have been in there and that, and you can probably agree or disagree or just stay quiet, is it's got that vibe, you know, that sort of... It's almost like you can go into a room, you can smell success. And in a dressing room, it just feels successful. And I've been told that that's what you've got there.
Yeah, I think that comes from the manager that creates that. You know, Chris, I could not speak any highly enough about Chris Corns than to mention Justin Edinburgh. I worked with Justin Edinburgh for 3 years at Newport County. And I just see something in Chris that I saw in Justin, that real desire, that real belief and that enthusiasm. And as you said, creating a togetherness within the football club. And over the years and the success I've had, you know, over the years with several different clubs, it all comes down to one thing, is that team spirit and everybody pulling in the right direction. And if you do that, you've got half a chance.
Wow, that's some sign off. Tim Harris, always a pleasure to speak to you. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck for Worcester City. And no doubt we will speak to you again very soon.
Thank you very much.
Now, by chance, we heard from Tim Harris of Worcester City there about how the non-league family has rallied and supported him during recent personal tragedy. And my next guest further highlights the camaraderie, the rivalries aside, and power of that non-league family. Saturday sees non-league come together once again. It is March to the Mallet, and if you're anything like me, just the title is intriguing enough to want to know more. And find out more we will. It's a pleasure to welcome to the Non-League Football Show Street FC player Harry Foster. Welcome, Harry.
Thank you. Hi there.
Good to get you on. Now, we've got a local derby, promotion-chasing clash, a very worthy fundraising event that sets aside rivalries, brings non-league together, and all inspired by you, or rather your daughter, Olivia. Do you want to tell us a bit more?
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, you're right. It'll be 90 minutes of blood, sweat and tears, a fierce rivalry locally. I think we're sitting fifth and they're sitting sixth in the league. So a massive game. But as you said, aside from the 90 minutes of football, there will be a lot of sort of friendliness, support, community feel, as there is a fundraising event going on. So my daughter, Olivia, was 15 months old last October, and unfortunately she passed away very suddenly and unexpectedly, so much so that we were in the park 24 hours before her death. And at the time I was playing down at Barnstable in the Juice and Western League, now, like you said, over at Street. Mm. And at the time, and for the last year, and obviously up to now, there have been extremely good support throughout all of the clubs, the teams, the fans, the players, the volunteers within the non-league football system. And me and my family have appreciated it massively.
Yeah, and how have they helped you? Because it's Two Wish that you're raising the funds for. Basically a charity that support bereaved parents, and that must come in lots of different ways.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, like you say, Two Wish Charity are the charity we've supported because they supported us so much. Mm. So when Olivia died back in October, we actually didn't have any support initially. But Two Wish, who were just a Welsh charity at the time, actually expanded their services just in the new year. So they offered us support with professionals, some funded counselling, a chance to sort of network with other bereaved parents, which is something no one ever wants to do. But when you're put into this situation, it is nice to actually connect with others that are in the same boat as you as such. So they supported us massively. And now my wife and I are making it our mission, sort of in Olivia's legacy, to raise funds to help other parents that unfortunately will find themselves in the same situation as us. And I can't speak highly enough of the charity. They've been extremely supportive, and it gives us some purpose again to sort of support others as well.
Yeah, and March to the Mallet. I'm so glad it's not some sort of Strictly spin-off featuring the greatest hits of old friend of the show, TV presenter Timmy Mallet. I mean, it's a walk, Street FC to Shepton Mallet FC. It's local, but I'm guessing it must be about half marathon distance. So I think I'd probably prefer doing some dance moves than actually the walking. But I mean, you're no stranger to distance because you've been raising money this year anyway. What, 5K a day, was it, during May?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So the March to the Mallet on Saturday, I'm pleased it's not a dance. I'm not much of a dancer. I'd rather walk, to be fair.
Oh, now there's a challenge. You've said it now.
It is around 13 miles, about half marathon. And I think there are about 40 people signed up to do the walk, which is absolutely incredible. The support behind it has been absolutely fantastic. And it was sort of organised. I won't be walking, as I'll be playing in the game. I'm 32 years old, need to save my legs. You know, I barely last 90 minutes, let alone walk to the game. But no, the Street sort of fans and committee are the ones who organised it, actually. And then Shepton got involved. Sort of all rivalries aside, they've been absolutely incredible. And I really do value their support. And, you know, not just Street and Shepton, actually, other non-league fans have got involved. So it's really taken off and it's fantastic. It's going to be a really good, really good event to showcase, that sort of football family, if you like. But like you said, other fundraisers, we've been busy and kept ourselves busy this year. The 5k a day in May was a big one. Running 5k every day in May was almost going to say enjoyable. Well, it didn't feel enjoyable at the time, but when we finished the last one, it was lovely to look back on. It was a really sort of special month that was. And we've done bingo, we've done quiz nights, we've done other sort of running events and whatnot. And we've got a big charity football game up at Street, actually, on Sunday the 29th of December. So lots and lots going on, and it's our way of sort of keeping Olivia's legacy alive and supporting the charity that have helped us incredibly over the last sort of year and a bit now.
Yeah, that 29th, that Sunday 29th, 2 p.m. kickoff there. You've got your usual, yes, your auction, your raffle, food fun, great prizes as well sort of available there. You mentioned the number of people that are doing the walk. You've got out of it. I bet you made sure, even if you were going to limp this week, you were definitely going to be available to play rather than do the walk. But a big shout out to Andy Stone, one of the non-league's finest as well. He's at AS_ Footy Review on Twitter, if people don't know of him. Hardcore non-leaguer. When you've got people like that, it must make you proud to be a non-leaguer yourself, really, is it? And sort of, I think your catchphrase sort of become "be more like Olivia," and it sounds like Olivia would have been a great non-leaguer.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. There's so many good people. Like you mentioned, Stoner there, he's been absolutely incredible. And John Bear, as well as sort of the committee at Street, sort of James Court and Wayne Bradshaw, who came up with the idea. But yeah, there are loads and loads of people behind the scenes that are putting so much effort. And I really do appreciate it, because it is that football family. It's incredible. And you mentioned there the Be More Like Olivia. That is sort of what me and my wife, Rebecca, decided very quickly after Olivia passed, was sort of how we're going to live our life. And like I said, she did die very suddenly, very unexpectedly. We actually take quite a lot of comfort in the fact that she only ever knew fun, love and happiness. And she was so energetic. She was so much fun. She was always running around here and everywhere and keeping us busy. So yeah, we do live our lives in that way. And it's all about trying to be positive, trying to support others, trying to enjoy things. And, you know, we find that difficult at times. Of course we do. But, you know, I've got that Be More Like Olivia tattooed on me now. So if I'm having a tough time, I have to have a look at it and remind myself. But a lot of other people have taken it on now, and sort of they do say Be More Like Olivia. And it means, again, it means the world to me and my wife, Rebecca. Just others getting involved and sort of living that way as well.
It is brilliant. It's great to know that it's just inspiring people. You're inspiring because you're a teacher away from this as well, and some of your younger supporters have already, they've set the bar high this week, haven't they, with their own fundraising.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so outside of football, I'm a primary school teacher. And you're right, my class decided 6 weeks ago they wanted to do something to be more like Olivia and support me and raise funds for Two Wish. Because we do speak quite openly in school, actually, about what's happened and things. And the children are intrigued, which is sort of how I encourage them to be in life. And actually, they decided then, because we got an exercise biking class, they were going to take on an endurance challenge 6 weeks, cycling to London, Edinburgh, Belfast and Cardiff, and then back to school in time for the Christmas holidays. It was a total of 2,225 kilometres, and they actually completed it today on Thursday. So they just about made it back in time. But they are incredibly proud of their efforts, as am I. And it's been really lovely. Again, it's sort of one of those things that's just brought everyone together in school. Yes, we've got the maths, the English, the science to teach. You know, yes, we've got the curriculum to teach, but actually those children have got so much out of working together to complete a fundraising challenge. And it's been lovely to see.
Yeah, and for any welfare officers listening, that they did do it virtually on an exercise bike rather than actually riding to London. Yeah, I can imagine the risk assessment having to be written on that one. You've done
school
trips.
I wouldn't fancy that.
A brilliant cross-curricular activity, though. Maths, geography, computing, I guess, everything going into that. I guess before I let you go, I should also ask you about the season for Street. As you mentioned, it was quite a tough clash at the top of the table there in the Western League. We spoke to Portishead a few weeks back on their FA Vars run that's still continuing, and they're sitting just above you in the table. But we also had Truro City on last week, battling with Torquay at the top of the National South. So at the moment, there's some serious football and footballers in and around the South West. Any particular reason for that? Has it always been there and just bubbling up to a crescendo now?
It does seem very strong at the minute, actually. And I think sort of our league's been a lot stronger over the past sort of three or four seasons since the introduction of quite a few Cornwall teams, actually. Mm. So we've had the likes of Helston, Mousel, Falmouth all sort of join our league just recently, whereas before it was predominantly sort of Somerset, Bristol, a couple of Devon teams as well, and Dorset. But yeah, I think since the introduction of those sort of Cornish teams, it has been a lot stronger. And this year it seems to be quite a strong league and very competitive. So yeah, it's enjoyable. But yeah, we've started the season extremely strongly, actually. First 10 games were unbeaten, somewhere along that, and then since then we've been a little bit up and down. But yeah, for the team we've got a lot of young players. We've got a really good manager in Ben Watson and assistant in Scott Laird, so they bring their experience in the non-league game and when football league as well, Scott. And yeah, we've got, you know, we've got myself and a couple of older heads, and then a lot of younger players. It's a really good mix, a good group of lads. And actually, where we're sitting at the moment, I think, is about right. We've had a really good season, and we're going to hopefully push those playoffs towards the end of the season this year as our target.
Yeah, and you alluded to being sort of one of the older heads, maybe amongst the dressing room there. After Saturday, you got a bit of turkey and tinsel, and then you're back in midday kickoff on Boxing Day, home to Bridgwater Town. Does that mean an early night for you on Christmas Day?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I'm used to playing on the Boxing Day. I love Boxing Day football. And actually, for me, I don't mind having a quiet Christmas Day. I'm more than happy just to have a bit of lunch, have a little nap in the afternoon, and then, get myself an early night ready for Boxing Day. But for me, I'm sort of quite happy with that, like I said. And then Boxing Day for me, early kickoff. And then it's always nice just to let my hair down a little bit on Boxing Day evening.
And you are a striker, and you've been banging in the goals this season. Any targets? How many are you going to net this season?
My pre-season target was 20. I'm currently on 12 and 18, so I'm pretty happy, yeah. Actually. I was struggling with a little bit of just a hamstring niggle towards the start of the season. So, I've played 18 games. I was hoping for a few more than that. But, yeah, I'll keep myself fit over the Christmas period, definitely. And 20 is still the target. I mean, hopefully, I'll keep myself fit. I'll be pushing towards that 25. But 20 for the season would do me just nicely this year, I think.
Well, it sounds a great target. It sounds a great cause that you're raising the funds for. It's a sad reasons, but it's always great to see a positive come out of those sort of things. Wish you best of luck with all the fundraising. Wish all those people that are making the march to the mallet the best of luck as well. And enjoy your football on Saturday and over the Christmas holidays. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, Harry.
Thank you very much for having me. Thanks for your time.
Time of the week then once again to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back once again to the Non-League Football Show. It's Editor-at-Large at the Non-League Paper, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm feeling very Christmassy, as in not. I'm not covered in tinsel. I haven't got bright lights, so I'm feeling very stressed and very disorganised. But hey-ho, that's...
Well, that's good. I'm too. I'm glad you're not one of these people that enjoys telling you how they've all done their shopping already. It's all done, it's all finished, all ready to wrap. They've got all the food sorted and they're just waiting for the big day to come, whereas I haven't even started any of it.
I think I've got a feeling I did buy a Christmas present in September because I was feeling quite smug at the time. Oh. And then it just all sort of, it's come round too quick. It's always too much going on.
There's too much going on in our league to think about Christmas, Tim. I think about Christmas too much.
You say that, but it seems to have been a quiet week this week. We'll come to some, the managerial merry-go-round that has been fairly busy again. I guess, let's start off with the league programme because, you know, some people, lots of my friends already, texting me, are you up for a beer tomorrow? Are you up for a beer this evening? Because everybody else in the world appears to shut down for Christmas, but not non-league, not the non-league paper.
No, we're going strong, and there's a lot of, a lot of huge games over. I love this sort of Christmas period. There's a real kind of thing about it, doesn't it? The sort of, the build up to it, but particularly the Boxing Day and the New Year's Day clashes. There's possibly not as much football this year where sort of Boxing Day's sort of falls, but the Isthmian leagues and the Southern leagues are playing on Wednesday and Saturday, aren't they? So next week. So yeah, there's lots going on. There's all the big derbies, and there'll be some huge crowds on Boxing Day as well, which is Always exciting. Always a good way to get out of the house with some fresh air for a couple of hours if you possibly can, and take in a game, because you know it's a that cliche, isn't it, of that big busy period where a couple of wins can change everything, all the outlook as you go into the new year and start moving in sort of the second half of the season.
Yeah, and interesting to see some of the earlier kickoffs seem to be drifting back in. Not in the National League, but certainly sort of lower down. I remember traditional Boxing Day kickoffs and New Year's Day kickoffs are 11 o'clock, and we got a few of those springing up. Obviously, in the era of the modern athlete playing non-league, an early morning kickoff the day after New Year's Eve shouldn't be a problem.
Well, this is it, you know. It's probably back in the old school days, they probably just went straight from the pub, didn't they? Straight down and carried and went straight out and performed, and no problems at all. But we were talking about this yesterday at the office, sort of like the 11 o'clock kick, and how that's quite a good one actually in some ways. But let's say, I don't know how the players always feel about it, but you know, it's nice to be able to get out in the morning, and then sometimes you can get a double header in if you're able. So lots of different kickoff times. It is a bit of a headache trying to make sure you've got them all right in the fixture page and in the paper. That's for sure. But yeah, it's going to be a busy period. I was talking to Jamal Ramadan, the Bury Town striker, mm-hmm. and he's sort of joking that he's going to be in the gym on Christmas Day trying to activate his hamstrings because they're playing. They've got about three games in 6 days, I think it is. But he's basically so yeah, busy. A busy period, but will be good fun.
I guess turkey's a good protein as well, isn't it, for these athletes? So you know, maybe it is a great time to be a non-league footballer. You led on the front page with the non-league paper last week about the heating up at the top of the National League for not just for the title chase, but also for that playoff place, because we know how, you know, in previous years, people have drifted into the playoffs late, and it really is, I think, one of the tightest National Leagues that I can ever remember.
Yeah, it does feel really, you know, the race for the playoffs really does sort of stretch quite far down the table at the minute. And obviously, I think, you know, naturally, kind of, as the season's kind of going on, you're sort of thinking about the top and that fight for the title, but it is really exciting, as you say, down below, with you know a whole handful of teams who you know are kind of a couple of wins away from being in there. And that, as you're saying, this, you know, this period, Boxing Day, New Year's Day period, in the National League, where you have got big derbies and things like that, and everyone knows that sort of anything can kind of happen in those sort of games, and they can be a bit different to the regular rest of the season. It is going to be, you know, be really interesting how it does when we finish on New Year's Day, how the table is looking as we start going into the new year. You know, it's I think it's even sort of slightly changed since we had the paper last week with Rochdale in midweek, obviously beating Tamworth, and that they jumped up into sixth now, and pushed Altrincham out of the playoffs into eighth as things stands, but they're only outside on goal difference, and so are Halifax and Solihull Moor, Sutton, Hartlepool, all 4 points away. Eastleigh, you know, only a point further back. Dagenham a point further back from Eastleigh, but we've, you know, both got games in hand on those above. So it's it's really exciting, and as we've sort of so often said, that the playoffs being extended down to seventh place has kind of, you know, does keep more teams in the mix all the way through the year, and that's made for really, really sort of exciting competition. And you know, I know there's always lots of talk of three up, three down, isn't there? And is that potentially getting even closer? You know, EFL, Rick Parry said the other week, you know, that there's the conversation that they also acknowledge that needs to be had, and we know that the National League and many others have been pushing for it for a long time, and it'll be interesting, whether the playoffs sort of go back to that sort of traditional four team format rather than the 16 that we've got now. But while it's here, it just makes for that real excitement, and it gives everybody that chance to really push for it in the new year and try and string a consistent run of results together to give yourselves the best chance. But it feels like it's changing on a daily basis at the moment as well, which is really exciting.
Yeah, you mentioned that change in the National League, the stretch of the playoffs there. But one of the discussions I was having this week is remembering back when the playoffs first came into non-league. I remember Yedding losing to Lewis when the National South and National was created and in its original format and a playoff then. And it just seemed such a weird thing. But I think if we were to play a normal league without playoffs now, a divisional, the season would be ended by this time of the season already, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And it's, you know, we've seen obviously the players have come in step 5 and 6 the last couple of years as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
And all the way through, and how that has, you know, that was felt like it was really needed, especially when they're sort of seeing everybody else kind of getting involved in that, because it does keep seasons alive for longer, which keeps more interest, that brings more people through the gates. They're not a fair system because that's kind of not the point of them. I suppose, you know, if it was all fair, then, you know, first and second would go up and that would be that. But the excitement, the drama, what the playoffs really does bring, and kind of, it, you know, being such a good way to go up. But it, you know, you think back, as you say, to those years and where it wasn't, you're seeing teams, you know, racking up huge amounts of points in second and not getting promoted because there was only those one spots, and you know, it's kind of created a better flow through the system as well. I just think it's, yeah, the best way to go up. You could pick it now and say you're going to go up through the playoffs, and that would be the way to do it. But it's it just brings, adds so much more, and they kind of become so, you know, so accepted now. You kind of can't even, you say, thinking back then to when they weren't sort of all the way through, is it'd be very strange if it was now. And that was the thing, you know, seasons could be over straight away. You know, if you lose kind of 6-7 games, then that's probably could be the title gone. And you're seeing that a lot in step 5, where there's, you know, teams who could really sort of dominate and steamroll through the division, and sometimes it could be effectively over, you know, well before now, because teams below them had lost sort of 5-6 games. It's just kind of a matter of time when they go through. So it gives everyone else a fighting chance, and then the playoffs are those one-off games when anything can kind of happen as well. And what you do in the league season doesn't count for anything.
Non-league sometimes suggested that it doesn't cope well with change. I think it's coped very well, and I think the games are better for it. One thing that probably maybe hasn't changed for the better is this managerial merry-go-round that seems to be. There's not much longevity as a manager. We joke about having to change your contacts book and mention where managers are in manager land nowadays. After we spoke to John Couch last week, there was some more movements, some more changes. I still don't understand why clubs give it all week before getting rid of the manager, 48 hours before a game, or maybe a point 24 hours before a game that gives the new man next to no chance to have a proper influence on style, or even probably not even getting to know the players. But it does seem to be the way. Yeah, we record this on a Thursday afternoon, and most of the movements seem to happen on a Friday.
It does. It does seem to feel like it should be a bit of a Monday job, doesn't it? If you're going to change the manager. And do it on a Monday, so at least gets two sessions, assuming that it's part-time, and into the two sessions at training, just to sort of at least say hello to the players. But yeah, lots. It does seem to be this ever-shortening lifespan of being a manager, and you know, you're seeing it right the way through the whole game, and that kind of mirrors down, doesn't it? You know, you're looking at right at the top is Southampton and the Russell Martin, even there, I think he's gotten promoted a few months ago, and that's kind of the life that managers lead now. I think sometimes sort of success can be, isn't always a good thing when you sort of can sort of make a rod for your own back the following season. So, it's always spinning that merry-go-round, isn't it? But as we say, you know, when someone moves on, then it opens up other opportunities for the next person. And yeah, I guess the headline one this week is Neil Ardley back in the game at Woking, isn't it? And you know, if they moved on from Michael Doyle, obviously had a bad result.
4-0 defeat at Gateshead, wasn't it?
And that sort of kind of, you know, obviously not been great for a little while. Sort of new owners coming in, new sort of people, you know, coming into the club as well with their own ideas, and perhaps that sort of felt even more inevitable.
We mentioned Jody Brown coming in as director of football recently, which was a big move, and sort of suggested that there was a bigger picture about to change.
Yeah, and of course there would be, you know, often is, isn't there? Because, you know, why would you, you know, it's kind of like all these things, you'd come in with your own ideas and put them in, and it's, you know, unfortunately sometimes the manager is the sort of casualty of that. But, you know, they've gone and appointed someone who certainly knows his way around, you know, this division and the ones above, and it'll be, I guess, there'll be kind of a big picture there for him and where they sort of want to get the club eventually. But at the moment, you know, winning games of football is going to be an absolute priority, because they've not having the greatest time of it at the moment, working by any means. You know, they are hovering above that relegation zone at the minute, and you know, got some decent players there that he can, which I'm sure is why Neil's decided to go there, because he can see what he can, you know, where he could get them and what they can become if they can get back there. You know, so a couple of years ago they got into the playoffs for the first time, at this level, and it hasn't quite happened for him since, and gone through a couple of managers now. So hopefully Cards fans will be hoping that Neil Ardley can be them, get them going and get them firing and climbing up the table and away from that danger zone.
Yeah, certainly got that track record to take clubs into that playoff zone. But as you mentioned, it far closer to the relegation zone than the even that very tight playoff zone at the moment. So it's still going to be a difficult job. Talking about the difficult job, another one announced this week, the new boss at Weymouth after the departure of Mark Molesey, ex-Northern Ireland international Warren Feeney takes the role on. Of course, he did spend, I think, just over a year in charge, wasn't he, with Welling United in the sort of 2022-23 sort of during that season just before, and then he returned to managing Northern Ireland. This one is going to be a tough task ahead, but I think both he and Weymouth supporters not sort of renowned for holding back on what they say, so I'd imagine it's going to be quite fiery as well.
I'm sure it'll be very interesting. I think my hearing's only just recovered from a few years ago being at Salisbury game when he was he was assistant there at the time, and he was up in the sort of the press box, kind of like looking down, overlooks the quite high up. It's quite a nice sort of viewing area at Raymac, so it's quite good for sort of that thing, shouting down to his shouting down instructions, and then to, you know, to the manager. I think it was Mikey Harris at the time, but very vocal to say the least. But you know he'll be under no illusions of the task that he's taking on. You know, he's a team they've won twice in 20 games, and that is. You know, that is a tough point to be starting from. And clearly not gone well at all there this season. We only scored, just looking at the table now, they only scored 12 goals in those 20 games. So a lot's got to change, and really quickly there's 7 points off it at the minute. And that is going to have to be a really quick turnaround. But I guess, you know, if he didn't think he could, then he wouldn't have gone in there, would he? And, you know, he also think they beat Yeovil in the trophy the week before last, and maybe that gives a little glimmer as well of what sort of potential was in there. If you can unlock that, probably no doubt add some players, change things around, and try and get that win. If you can get an early win in his managerial reign, and that, you know, that can often really change feelings and momentum around, and suddenly you can try and build off that. But yeah, huge task and lots to do, and I'm sure he'll be hard at work already on that front.
Yeah, that's where we might need a fly on the wall documentary, and we'll come to more of those later on. But I think that's going to be an interesting one to watch. Another big appointment this week as well along the south coast: Jamie Howell and Michael Birmingham returning to Bognor Regis Town as joint managers after Robbie Blake's departure. both, of course, former legends when they were players, I'd say, at Rock. Certainly, you know, I remember them playing multiple times against Yedding back in the day. Howe, previously 7 years or so in charge as well at Bognor on his own. Birmingham's done really well in the last 9 years where he's been in charge locally at Horndean. They are rock bottom, though, as they begin their tenure. But I would expect not for long, because there's probably not too many, certainly across the south, that those two won't know and won't be speaking to or WhatsApping. Probably already have. I'd imagine a few changes of personnel, but also getting the best out of the players they've already got there.
Yeah, and sort of similar to Weymouth, they're 7 points off it at the moment, both on 12 points. You know, they're, you say, bottom of the Isthmian Prem, and won three games so far. So, again, lots to improve on, and, you know, in that, you know, the 19 games so far, they've lost 13 of them, you know, conceded a lot of goals in the process. So they'll be obviously looking to shore that up straight away. But as you say, a club they know really well. And I remember Jamie Howe, it was a few years ago when he had Bognor kind of going well in the FA Trophy, weren't they? And had a really good run in that. And we're going up to went up to Grimsby to see them in I can't remember if they got to the semi final actually, but yeah, they had a really good run, didn't they? And he was, you know, they were sort of really pushing and you know, that's obviously what they're wanting. Again, big picture, that's what they want to be getting back to. But at the minute, it's about winning games and this Christmas period where, you know, in this division, they've got Saturday, next Thursday, Saturday, and then New Year's Day. So four games in a really quick space of time, and pick some points up in that, and it can look a whole lot of different when you're, when everyone's hangovers on New Year's Day finally wear off, and start looking into that new year and pushing forward again.
Yeah, it's probably actually not a bad time to come in as a new manager, because you probably spend more time with your players than you would during the normal part of the season. You know, I know a number of managers like to get their players in Christmas Eve or even Christmas Day if they can, because, you know, there's the opportunity just to have a bit of social time, because a number of people are already off work in their other jobs.
Yeah, and another ridiculously tight division as well, that has been playing, you know, looking at that now, sort of from fifth, where Chatham are in the playoff places, down to 17th, Cray, Wanderers, two places above the drop zone. That's a 6 points difference. So, you know, that's it's kind of, I suppose, that sort of slightly sort of boring thing that people say, everybody could beat everybody, but at the moment it does look like that's sort of kind of the case. So that would kind of maybe give them a bit of hope and a bit of heart if they can get something going, they can start pushing up the table. And but again, knowing exactly what their task is, what they're taking on, they wouldn't take it on if they didn't think they could do something about it.
Yeah, and it does appear to be the week of new managerial announcements for those bottom of the table. This week's in the last 24 hours or so, Russell Olympic have confirmed their current management team of manager Richard Sneaks, assistant manager Steve Hinks, and player coach Sam Mantum have been given the job on a permanent basis. They are bottom of the National North, and again, what are they? They're eight points adrift of safety, but that they seem to have been handling things well enough so far, and have been given the nod. Hopefully, not that nod of appreciation just before the colour in the new year.
Yeah, I think that sort of shows what a ridiculously difficult division that National League North is as well. I know Russia obviously were up last year as well, weren't they? But you know, you look at in that bottom three of Marine, they've only not long been there. Well, it says their first season there, Radcliffe, promoted last year, Needham, who obviously got, you know, huge amounts of travelling, and you know, did amazing to get there as well. And Kevin Hort's done a brilliant job at Needham, and having to sort of deal with all sorts of other things, of, you know, like the travelling, and sort of the amount of time they're having to sort of spend on the road, as they would have done if they, you know, been placed in the south as well. But it just showed what kind of a tough division it is, because you know it's hard for clubs, you know, like Rushall to really, you know, fully compete with some of the size in there, and some of the money that's kind of flying around. And then you've got to look right through the table, see how, you know, look in the middle of the table, how strong the teams are there, to kind of what you're dealing with. They're the ones who aren't even pushing into the playoffs at the moment. But it's every year there's teams who kind of, they look kind of like they're out of it, and everyone's sort of writing their obituaries and it's all done, and they put results together and somehow pull off a great escape. And there'll be teams who do it this year, I'm sure, and that's what everybody will be hoping, and that'll be their team. If you are in that mess at the moment, it would be their team that can do it.
Yeah, and you talk about the strength of that National North. Looking at the Boxing Day fixtures there, you've got Hereford against Kidderminster the Harriers. I mean, if you're a TV channel, you'd want to be putting that on live anyway, wouldn't you?
Yeah, huge game. So it sounds, got the sound of like a Football League game, yeah, about it, doesn't it, as well? You know, certainly a big big conference game back in the day. So, yeah, it's a completely, it's really interesting. Maybe it'd be sort of interesting, sort of summer piece to kind of look, you know, go back again. I think we did it a few years ago. We did kind of like a ladder or snakes and ladders of where teams had sort of come and gone in the last sort of period of time, and how, you know, different the National League system looks. And that National League North particularly is a real beast of a division now. You know, a few years ago, if you said sort of Scunthorpe and Kidderminster and Chester's and Hereford's would be battling out, but you know, Kearns National would be top of the league, you would have thought you've gone crazy. But it shows, you know, what a good division it is and what a good job they're going doing at Kearns National as well to be above everybody. And that's a fascinating title race as well, shaping up already as well.
Elsewhere, what have you seen there? Sean McConville appointed the first team manager after the departure of Jimmy Bell up at Colville.
Clitheroe,
sorry. I can't even read my own handwriting there. it's a rugby town of also part of a company with manager Carl Adams. Interesting one in Eastern Counties League. Long Melford have got rid of Liam Joyce and appointed new joint managers Rob Fayers and also Darren Thomas, who happens to be the son of the chairman. That's going to be, if that doesn't go well, that's going to be a difficult Christmas dinner, isn't it, that one? I think the fact that we've seen Neil Ardley sort of jump back into the dugout, it just shows the number of managers out there that are still desperate to get back into the dugout, particularly at this time of year, and get back involved. Elsewhere, we've seen the crazy world of non-league and sort of the sad side of non-league as well. Last weekend's combined counties Premier South match between Milton United and Hilltop, it was delayed 20 minutes due to apparently Hilltop arriving without any socks. So the Milton had to find their change kit and sort of arrange a change kit, socks for them to wear. And then once it was underway, a spectator was unwilling to leave the ground, which led to the referee abandoning the game. We don't know any more details, so it's, you know, probably best not to comment on the actual event. But it just raises those questions again about the need for trained stewards, maybe SIA staff at football matches, and then the cost and the red tape that comes with all that. But I think it is, you know, something that's essential to keep all fans, players and officials safe. So, you know, when players on the field are earning money, we also need to think about spending some money off the field to make sure that we can all enjoy the game that we're paying to watch, and hoping that, you know, non-league can thrive rather than, you know, suffer at the hands of just one individual.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, you go to a non-league game and you expect to feel safe, don't you, like any football. And I guess you say it sort of shows that, you know, how much support clubs need. And, you know, I know there's obviously lots of initiatives going on in the game and all that kind of thing. But, you know, there is a real need for it. And it is at all levels. And unfortunately, the way sort of some things have begun, people seem to think that they can act however they like in football grounds. And that's just, you sort of worry, you know, I think we kind of know how, what good can non-league can be and sort of the great sort of side of it, but you do sort of, you know, some things that can sort of go on in ground, you think, if I was a first time person here, would I want to be coming back? And that's not the sort of impression that anyone wants to be leaving, but clubs do need support. You know, they've got so much to do as it is, it's hard to find volunteers as we all know, for all sorts of jobs, let alone kind of stewarding and sometimes having to really sort of, you know, ever increasingly sort of have that sort of pressure to kind of step in and sort situations out. It's, you know, that's not what people are sort of volunteering to be a steward for. They can just help the club and help the game match day run smoothly. But something then be asked to sort of get involved in all sorts of things. It's not fair. But it's hard to know where you kind of get all that resource from to get people in who can sort of deal with it. It's not an easy answer. So. Yeah, I think it's kind of just trying to everyone look out for each other sort of thing.
Well, really, I think that's it. I think that's the message, is that non-league needs to be aware of it. Fans need to be aware of it. Officials of clubs need to be aware of it, so that everybody works together. We talk about this non-league family, and that needs to come off the field in sharing knowledge, sharing experiences, and a little bit of education as well. You mentioned various initiatives going on. I'm obviously involved with the club program at the FA, and hopefully we'll have some more on that in the new year with the various changes and the way the FA are trying to support clubs. But it is sort of beyond football that maybe clubs need a little bit more hand-holding and guidance, because it's a whole new world to many, particularly those that have been moving up the pyramid, and also where we're finding certain elements of the game that seems to have left the higher echelons of football and sort of making their way down further down the pyramid, which isn't a good thing. Interestingly, one of the ways that we do get exposure of non-league in recent years are documentaries. Maybe a new non-league documentary on the way. There's new owners at Morden and Tiptree, and their 20-acre stadium site at Park Drive there. An offer accepted from the Drew Barlow organisation based in Chelmsford. They're headed by self-made millionaires Barry and Scott Druitt Barlow, perhaps best known as the UK's first gay dads, fathering twins, and via surrogacy in 1999. They are, though, never shied away from fame. They've appeared on both Rich House, Poor House and Below Deck Sailing Yacht. Not a regular watch in the Fuel household, but I'm sure got plenty of coverage around. And there has been mention of a production company maybe documenting their new ownership of the football club. It would be interesting to see sort of more behind the scenes on the non-football things and how clubs are run.
Yeah, I think there's a real appetite for kind of sort of behind the scenes documentary stuff in all sorts of sports now, and I think non-league provides that real sort of great sort of authentic content as well, doesn't it? And everyone's looking for seen the success, kind of through the non-traditional platform, so to speak, with Dorkin and a bunch of amateurs. Mm. All that sort of coverage that goes on, like YouTube and TikTok, and it's there's no denying it. It really does capture the imagination of people, and people kind of might not kind of come into contact with non-league football normally, see it, watch it, love it, and then end up going. Look at Farnham Town, how they've managed to grow their crowds in recent seasons through similar sort of behind the scenes stuff and the way they sort of cover their club. Obviously hashtag with their amazing success story as well. People, I think there's always been that appetite for documentary, and people like sort of seeing that behind, feel like they're sort of seeing something bit different, and even more so at the minute. And if that can be a good sort of source for getting more people interested and involved in Morden and Tiptree, then I'm sure that it can really help the club grow. It's not things, programs that have been on my planner that I've sort of seen, like the Below Deck and all that sort of stuff, but it's no denying all the popularity of those programs, and I think it's interesting. Anything kind of shows and brings new people into the game is good. If it can bring new fans into the stadium, then that's a great thing. And I've got friends who aren't really interested in non-league football, but it's amazing how much sort of they sort of see of kind of like Dawkins and the Wrexham thing when it was on as well. It sort of it does kind of come into their into their spheres, and they sort of mention it and see it and kind of take an interest, and that shows the reach of these things these days.
I'm sure non-league got a lot more credibility amongst younger potential female audiences with the appearances of various non-league players on Love Island as well. So it's always good just to stretch the, I call it the breadcrumb effect, you know, Hansel and Gretel, you know, you bring in new audiences by, you know, just touching, you know, different areas of the world. You know, people that wouldn't watch a non-league football game if it was streamed live may well come in and become part of the family just by watching one of these other programs. Anyway,
I think some of them, you know, one of the things as well is a lot of these documentaries that have been done, they sort of shown, you say, like, we're giving non-league real sort of credibility as well. They're not kind of, you know, you don't want those sort of ones that can make down look like a bit of a sort of a clown show and a, you know, ha-ha, let's look at this. But no, not, you know, there's lots of these documentaries showing, you know, what sort of good work is going on and good people are behind the scenes and they're at the club. You know, we had the recent one with Welcome to Wroxham, didn't we, with with the Stepford Yachtsmen doing their own sort of behind the scenes to sort of show off their club, and you get to see, you know, what is going on at non-league clubs. And in fact, you also help people get involved or want to get involved or inspired to get down to their club and not only watch but help and volunteer. Then that can only be a good thing as well.
It is a good thing, as is non-league, as is the non-league paper. A busy last weekend before Christmas. Anything else you want to tee up that we can expect to read in this weekend's non-league paper?
Well, as you say, lots of focus on the big weekend of football. We've also got a white Ensign in there after their VAR success last week. So I spoke to Chamal Ramadan at Berry's on 16 goals already this season, and they're going well. And they've got a big Suffolk derby coming up, or a couple of those actually over the first period. But they've got Felixstowe Wharton, who are second at their Berry top of the Eastman North at the moment. Felixstowe Wharton are second as we speak, and they're playing each other on New Year's Day, which will be a fascinating game. And we also dishing out the non-league paper's annual Christmas presents getting out, so, you know, see what's under the Christmas tree on Christmas Day. From the NLP's gifts, we'll be revealing those in Sunday's paper.
Oh, all different shapes. Have people been feeling these presents through the paper?
This is it. You know, some all sorts of different sizes, and some more ridiculous than others.
Just like non-league journalists. Anyway, thanks as ever, Matt. Looking forward to the non-league paper this weekend. Have a great Christmas, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Have a good Christmas. Take care.
And there we have it, and that is it for this week then. Don't forget, you can get involved on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel. Like, we may be a little bit later going out next week because of the way Boxing Day falls on the Thursday, and the ability to get some up-to-date information out to you for next week's issue. So we may come out a little later on Friday. Do be aware of that. As ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast FM, Podcast Addict, Player FM, Podchaser, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, and your Christmas. Thank you, and goodbye.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.